You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Your girl man saver, better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right, when you do wrong, when it turn right, but you turn all the way, lele.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima, energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome, glad I'm here. I'm so glad we're all here together. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I am absolutely thrilled to welcome one of our very favorite people to our conversation today. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Yes, I am Dwayne Brayboy. I am Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina, and I'm Bear Clan.
I'm so happy you're here.
I'm glad to be here. It's always a fun time being here, and always great to talk to you.
Wonderful. Well, today I thought we would talk about sovereignty, and if you would be so kind as to tell us what you think of as the definition of sovereignty.
That is a great topic. Sovereignty is very important to my people. That's something that we live by, and that being that we are our own highest authority, you know, over our population, our territory, the way that our little nation operates. You know, we don't allow outsiders to influence or govern us. We govern ourselves. I think fundamentally that is a good description of sovereignty. And the way that that manifests, it happens in different ways. But basically, that's what it means to me. And it means that it means so much because we're sovereign, the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina. You know, we don't have the BIA telling us what we can or can't do, you know, how we can or can't live, or other outside governments telling us what we must do, how we can or can't live. You know, we live by our own code.
Wow. Definitely well said. Absolutely. So when you think of sovereignty, what does that mean when you think of decolonization?
That is another great connection. With sovereignty or living in a sovereign state, decolonization and sovereignty, I feel they go hand in hand. You know, I don't think you can be sovereign without the concept of decolonization always being so close to you, or a people. So we do as much as we can with that. You know, we are like other Indian nations on the, well, across Turtle Island, but here in North Carolina, we were the first to meet the Europeans. You know, the English, well, first the Spanish, then the English, you know, they came here in the early 1500s, and so we've known them for the longest. And, you know, we here in North Carolina, we have been living with colonization for hundreds of years longer than, say, Plains tribes. And so because of so much more time spent with colonization and therefore the assimilation that goes along with it, you know, we've had a deeper hole to dig ourselves out of. than, say, people, Indian nations that have only been living with colonization for, say, the past 200 years or 150 years. So we've got a lot of work to do, and we've done a lot of work. You know, we've come a long way. So colonization and, sovereignty and decolonization go hand in hand, I believe.
Once again, well said. I am interested to find out how you personally think about sovereignty and indigenization.
That is a very good a very good thought there. Sovereignty and re-indigenization. Well, I always look for examples, personal examples or examples of my own people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to use outside examples of other people unless they're just really good, strong examples of things. But, you know, re-indigenization and sovereignty. You know, we are a sovereign nation. You know, we are in five treaties with the Americans, with the American government. And so, you know, we are acknowledged through our treaties, but it's kind of like the concept of the two-row wampum, where, you know, we stay in our canoe and they stay in their boat. But that's getting a little off the point. In recent times, something that we've done is we have erected a large sign there at our largest community. You know, the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina is comprised of three communities. And our largest one, Maxton, is what we call that community, which is in English means Drowning Creek. We put up a big sign there in our language. That's, I think, a great example, I think, of marking our territory, letting the world know this is our land, this is our territory, and anyone who crosses that way knows that they are on Tuscarora land.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think that's a powerful reminder to folks of exactly where they are and who is there as well. When I think of indigenization, I always think of taking things that exist that may not be ours, and infusing them and empowering them and enlightening them with our tribal values and culture, traditions, our language, our ways, whatever nation you may be, whatever indigenous people group you may represent. And then when I think of decolonization, I think of actually taking something that's been given to us. It is not necessarily ours. It may even be toxic. And then taking it apart and reframing it in our own tribal values. But sovereignty, I think of as the way it is. This is us.
Right? Right.
Nobody gives us sovereignty. We just are sovereign. You know, you're not given sovereignty. You just are sovereign. It's just you. It's who you are, your ancestors, your future descendants, all of us. Sovereignty belongs to us. And so that's why I just learned so much from what you just shared so brilliantly, because that is a great way to think about things. And I love the fact that what you shared has action involved in it. You know, we're going to put up a sign.
Yes.
We're going to do these things, not just sit there and think. You can think Indian, and that's a great way to start. But I love the fact that you have action in all of your thinking. This is wonderfully enlightening for me to listen to you.
Thank you. And putting these thoughts into action, that is integral to re-indigenizing because, you know, over my lifetime, I've known so many people, so many Indians who have shared great ideas. And so I've always told them, you know, because I'm not one to hijack somebody's ideas, I've just always been an encourager, you know, a supporter. And so I've always encouraged people, you know, that is a great idea. You know, you really should do something with that. You know, go suggest that to the right people. You know, put that into action. And, you know, sometimes they have and a lot of the times they haven't, you know, and I think that that's something that that's also something I've seen in my time is people who have good ideas, but then they seem to be very reserved about sharing them because they may seem too radical, or then, you know, people will shoot them down or some such. But I'm like, we have no time to waste. Okay. We just need to get busy, you know, and this is a great idea, you know, put it out there. So just encouraging people along the way. And, you know, I was thinking about your idea of re-indigenization and taking something and making it ours. And it made the first thing I thought of was the Glengarry Cap. You know, when down in the southeastern part of the state where I'm from, there is a lot of Highland Scots that moved into that area. Kayagatwayaga is what we call them, which is buckskins, because the Highland Scots, these Celtic people, they were too poor to own proper fabric clothing like the more affluent English who had moved into the area. So these Celtic Highland Scots people were so poor, the only sort of clothing they could afford to wear were the buckskins, you know, made from the deer that they hunted and all. So that's what we, that's why we Tuscaroras called them Kayagatwayaga. It's you know, they're identified or known by their buckskins. And they were our allies. You know, we had a pretty close relationship with the Scottish people. They were our allies. But they brought with them, and from their culture, the Glengarry Cap. And, you know, I don't know. I guess it's kind of shaped, you know, from the top a little bit like an eye, like that shape, like the organ, not the letter. And so the Scottish people, they just brought over their Glengarry caps because that's part of their culture. But, you know, natives, you know, we took them and started beating them. You know, we beated everything. And so we beaded these Glengarry caps, and so that that tradition still lives today. You know, there are still Haudenosaunee people who wear the beaded Glengarry caps, and they actually came from Scotland.
Oh, what a great story.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love that. And so here we come now to sovereignty, which I think we have to talk about. We have to exert. I mean, we tried the assimilationist path for a long time, right? Like if we were more like them, they would accept us or at least not harm us, right? But now, especially in this political cycle, we see the plans that certain groups had for, do have for tribal sovereignty and land and all of that. And I think we have to really wake up and understand sovereignty.
Absolutely.
And understand it. It's just, we can't, we don't have the luxury anymore of thinking that we can go along to get along, or that people will accept us if we dress like them or talk like them, or if we don't use our tribal ways, maybe they'll not notice us or not harm us in some way. I just want to know what you think of that.
so much to say about that right now. Mm-hmm. Oh, first, I will say that that's literally something that that happened to my people in particular. You know, there's two groups of Tuscarora. At this point, there's three different groups. You know, there's us in North Carolina and Robeson County. There's the Tuscaroras in Lewiston, New York. And then after the Revolutionary War, those Haudenosaunee people who sided with the British were exiled to Grand River, Ontario, Canada. And so that became the Six Nations Reservation. So there are three different communities with Tuscaroras, or I should say maybe three different nations. But here in North Carolina, we had the northern villages and the southern villages. Some people say the upper towns and the lower towns, but you know, they were there was just slight dialectal changes in our language. You know, and I would say that it's maybe comparable to, say, the way that the English that people might speak in, say, New York State versus the way that people might use English in North Carolina. You know, we're still speaking English, but just slight differences. So it was the southern villages, led by Chief Hancock, which was the English name they assigned to him because, you know, the English had a very big problem with native languages. So they would just assign chiefs and people that they dealt with an English name. So Chief Hancock from the southern villages, it was people from his group that started well, I don't want to say they started it, but let's just say that they lit the fuse on the Tuscarora Wars that started in 1711. And then we from the northern villages who were under our Chief Blunt, which he adopted that name from one of his good friends who was a neighbor of his who was English, he adopted that name because, again, they really wouldn't deal with Indians by Indian names really that often. And so there were these two groups of Tuscaroras in North Carolina at that time. And we from the northern villages tried to remain neutral, but it's because the English had, which would become the Americans, had kidnapped our chief's children, relatives, and held them hostage. And if a lot of people don't know these things, but this is the real history, you know. And so if anyone from the northern villages under Chief Tom Blunt were to join the fighting against the colonists, then of course the threat was that the family members would start being killed. So they forced us into this neutral state. And even though we were technically neutral, there were still some Tuscaroras from the northern villages and helping out back channeling things and such, you know. So that's a long back story to this point that after the war was over and the minority of Tuscaroras who had migrated north to New York and the majority stayed here in North Carolina, the colonists, the government and such told us at that time and through treaties, you know, look, if you adopt our language, if you adopt our political system, you know, our beliefs, our religion, you know, you'll be great like us. You know, you'll be elevated. Mm-hmm. And and so, yeah, my ancestors were pretty much forced into that game, and we lost. You know, we've seen the results of that, of the trust and the allyship that we gave to them. You know, we saw the, you know, we still see the results of that. We've no land, of our original lands, you know, the treaty lands, you know, which, you know, are still binding. You know, they might not want to honor the treaties, but we hold these treaties, you know, right, where we still have our land.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the danger, you know, of being compromised into this system of assimilation. Because the goal has always been to eradicate us as who mm-hmm. we are, because if they made us in their image or remade us in their image,
mm-hmm.
then we were no longer going to be a threat to them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a story told all across Turtle Island. We're not unique in this. We're mm-hmm. just one of many nations that have lived through, and some didn't live through, this experience.
Mm-hmm. I really thank you for sharing this story, because I think that part of sovereignty is the ability to tell our own story, you know, as opposed to, you know, as accepting whatever is told about us or allowing other people to interpret us and then disseminate the information about us, right? We get to tell
exactly.
our own stories. And the backstory should be the story in sovereignty, our version,
yes.
Our story should be the most important part of sovereignty. And I really thank you for sharing that with us, because, you know, until the lion learns to write, every story will glorify the hunter. So,
absolutely. It is,
you know,
true.
Sovereignty means we
yeah.
tell our own stories. It means that we do what one of my great mentors, the late Dr. Lee Francis, who started Wordcraft Circle of Native Writers and Storytellers. He taught at University of New Mexico. He was a great champion of Native American literature. And one day he just pulled me aside. Everyone had been eating lunch and having fun and all of that. And he said, you know, I need you to write books. I need you to write books. Not just write stories, not just write poems or articles, but to write books. And I was kind of like, yeah, okay. I was a student, you know. And he said, no, I mean it. It's time. You need to write books. Because until our people tell our stories, someone else will tell them about us, and they will tell them wrong.
Right.
And so
right.
I see the stories, the reclamation of stories, as a real assertion of sovereignty.
Yes, I agree with that. It is so important to tell our own stories, because just like the story I just told you, this is a story that some Tuskegors don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
I've visited the other Tuskegor communities up north, you know, in Lewiston and in Six Nations. And when I'm not a presumptive person, but I just always assume everybody knows everything I know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm just one of those people. I just, you know, and so I would, you know, visit up north and start talking about things like this, like the real story about, mm-hmm. you know, the Tuscarora War, how it began, what led up to it, the slavery, enslaving Indians and our people and selling them into the slave trade and,
mm-hmm.
you know, sending them to Pennsylvania or Barbados and, you know, all this stuff. And so many people mm-hmm. don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess that, you know, when people are just trying to survive,
mm-hmm.
It's so hard to know everything that there is to know. And so that's where people like you and I come in.
Yes, yes.
You know, we are teachers, mm-hmm. you know. And, mm-hmm. You know, and something else I meant to add earlier before I...
Sure.
Went into the weeds was
we loved
the other aspect of that story about being aware. I posted this recently because there is a governor candidate for the state of North Carolina here.
Cry tears.
Yeah, who had recently said publicly that the whole Native American stories of extermination were just grossly exaggerated.
Oh.
And this person is up for governor of North Carolina.
As a North Carolinian, I'm just like, what? What?
Yeah. What? Yeah, this is, and this person, you know, who is living on Tuscarora land.
Right.
Said this about all natives, not just my people, not just natives in North Carolina, but right. all natives. You know, 90% of our population exterminated.
Unbelievable.
And he's saying that the stories of Native American extermination are grossly exaggerated. So I posted that amongst, you know, I'm not on social media right now, but I did share that information with a text group of Tuscaroras that I've got going, and just let them know. Y'all need to know. In 2024, it is so imperative to know who our allies are and who our oppressors are. And it brought me back to another thought that I had before, where I watched the documentary, The Canary Effect.
Yeah.
And so powerful. And there's a recording of Ronald Reagan, former President Ronald Reagan, speaking of his idea of dissolving the whole reservation system in America. And, you know, and his reasoning was like, why do these people, these Indians, want to live on their own reservations and stay away from the rest of us? You know, we should, you know, dissolve these reservations and force them to come live amongst us. And, you know, and I'm just, wow, how tone deaf. Like, this does not get it. And again, we need to know who's our ally and who's our oppressors.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was also in that documentary that I learned that it was George Bush Sr., former President George Bush Sr., who had spearheaded the eugenics programs in America, where minority women, like particularly Native American and African American women, would go to the doctor for a cold and come out sterilized.
That's right. Appendectomy. They used to call that the reservation appendectomy.
Right. Right. Again, in 2024, we have to know who's our ally and who's our enemy.
Have to. And I want to really, I mean, what you're saying is brilliant and important. And again, you know, you do have to know your allies. You have to know your enemies, but you have to know you too. See, I think one of the dangers we have is we have sovereignty, we're talking about it, and then we have people who are not aware. They really don't know.
Right.
So when that person you're talking about running for governor did say that this was our traditions are witchcraft, a lot of our own people don't know that they weren't.
Right, and I will tell you this. At this juncture, I will tell you that even in my own community, in my own community, there is a term that got vilified, demonized by the settlers. And that is from, it stems from our traditional medicine people. Now, I descend, I'm Bear Clan, and Bear is the medicine clan. And I descend from a long line of medicine women. My great-grandmother was a medicine woman in the Saddle Tree community. Her mother was a medicine woman, and her mother's mother was a medicine woman. So I come from this long line of Bear Clan medicine women. And, of course, you know, Mom was raised by my great-grandmother for a while, and she told me, you know, about the medicine knowledge that she received from her and such. And, you know, so my point to this story is that because Ma, which is just what we call my great-grandmother, because Ma could heal herself, because she could heal other people, she and didn't subscribe to Western medicine, she was called a witch by the settlers, and a root worker, because, you know, the medicine people work with roots. And so in my community, even today, amongst so many people, a root worker is synonymous with witchcraft. And that is so disappointing. And I set out, like, a long time ago, a couple of decades ago, I'm like, I'm going to reclaim this word. I'm going to reclaim this word, you know, my, you know, and I have, one of the ways I've done it is, like, for example, right now, I've had a couple of people from my community call on me for some medicines because people, them or people in their households have become sick. And so in my community, this is just something that I've always been known for myself, is, you know, some people call me a healer, but I don't call myself a healer. But, you know, this is one of the things that, that I do for the people. And so after having healed people in the past, and they have thanked me, I have always mentioned that, you know, I healed you with roots, you know. If that's particularly the case, you know, in that particular instance, you know, I used roots. And so I am a root worker, you know, that that doesn't make me a witchcraft practitioner. It means I'm a healer. It means that I'm using the same medicines that have sustained our people for millennia to heal people.
Sounds like sovereignty to me.
It sure does.
Yep, it sure does.
Sounds like sovereignty to me, too.
When we come back, we're going to talk much more about these great things, and we're going to think of ways that each of us can put them into action. We'll be right back.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage. Scroll down to Featured Podcast. Click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come. Another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
The COVID-19 vaccines can be our chance to get back to our plans. Who we are. What we miss. To get back to each other. To life. But it's okay to have questions, like, how were the vaccines tested? In rigorous clinical trials among adults of diverse backgrounds. Can the vaccines give you COVID-19? You cannot get COVID-19 from a vaccine. Why should I get vaccinated? Protecting yourself also helps protect the people around you. Find the latest information at GetVaccineAnswers.org.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie, Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring, it's volunteering in your community, it's shoveling a neighbor's snow, or cutting an elderly person's grass for them, or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
Your daughter doesn't want to talk about why her room is a horrible mess. Your son doesn't want to talk about why he's wearing mismatching socks. Your spouse doesn't want to talk about their bad haircut. Families don't have to talk about everything, but they should talk to plan for an emergency. Pack basic supplies in a go bag, water, canned food, flashlights, batteries, medical supplies, IDs, and some cash. Talk about where you'll meet in case you lose one another. And of course, don't forget to pack the dog treats. Talk to your family and make an emergency plan. Go to nyc.gov/readyny or call 311 to make your family's emergency plan. Brought to you by New York City Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
What a powerful and I would say sacred conversation we're having today, and that's all because of today's great guest. Would you please reintroduce yourself to us?
Yes, my name is Dwayne Brayboy. I am Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina, and I'm Bear Clan.
I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad we're having this conversation.
I'm glad to be here.
Oh, we're thrilled every time you are here. And I think the reason I admire your thoughts on these things so much is because you do the work. you're not just sitting around talking about these things like it's a salon, right? We're all discussing these great ideas. You're doing the work. And so,
yes.
How can we all do the work? How can we actually step up for sovereignty?
That is another great question. Well, it's like I was recently saying to somebody in my community that one of the things that I like to do, one of my responsibilities in my community is I teach. You know, I teach our language, mm-hmm. I teach our history, I teach, you know, traditional culture and in the context of, you know, we need to reintegrate some of these things that have been lost in the white fire of colonization back into our current culture. There's a responsibility that comes with education and knowledge. And yes. With that responsibility, that responsibility in action is what's going to make, is going to further sovereignty for people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great responsibility there. And it comes in different ways. I mean, we need to be like spiritually sovereign, you know? And being spiritually sovereign, I think, goes back to, you know, my personal beliefs about what makes a strong nation, you know, begins with the individual. Strong individuals build strong families. Strong families build strong communities. Strong communities build strong nations. That all begins with the individual. We cannot shirk that responsibility. We can't put it off and say that somebody else will do it. You know, we don't have that luxury. You know, with Native Americans accounting for what, 1.5% of the population,
right.
You know, we can't afford to shirk that responsibility to our, to ourselves, to our communities, to our nations, to our families, to the seventh generation. I was recently saying this as well. Been doing a lot of talking lately, but
that's wonderful.
But I was saying that, you know, the seventh, you know, the Haudenosaunee concept of the seventh generation, you know, is which I know we're not the only ones who subscribe to that, but it is not just pretty words to say. You know, they can't mm-hmm. just be pretty words to say. We've got to put them in action. You know, we have to make all of our decisions today based on how it's going to affect the seventh generation from now.
Yes.
We have to do that. You know, there's, if we're going to survive as a people, that's how we have to be. But, you know, so many, you know, within Native America, you know, there's still so much abject poverty
mm-hmm.
and the social problems that go along with it. You know, it's hard, I think, for a lot of people to be warriors that we need today
mm-hmm.
because they've been compromised by economically disadvantaged areas, which if anyone's on a reservation, then they, you know, understand that very well.
Yeah.
But even though my people don't stay on a reservation, you know, Robeson County, North Carolina is a reservation nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
We may not have boundaries, you know, other than our three Tuscarora communities, but, you know, we experience all the same things because we are an Indian community. But it's just...
I'm so sorry. Sovereignty is the right to define yourself, though. Absolutely. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. No, you're right. You're right. We do have the right to define ourselves. And this is my ongoing pervasive message to the people is we define ourselves. How are we going to define ourselves then?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to present ourselves to the world?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just so important, you know, to understand,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I feel like some people who have just been beaten down by the system for so long feels like we're powerless
mm-hmm.
and that we have to rely on some external force to somehow define us or whatever this outside force, however they define us, is what we have to be. And I've just something I've told people, natives for decades, is we've got to stop seeing ourselves through the lens
mm-hmm.
of the settlers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know who we are, so many of them,
mm-hmm.
you know, not these days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I talk to people here in North Carolina who think that we really stayed in teepees.
Or extinct.
So,
extinct.
Yeah, or extinct, you know, all of that. You know, those things always come up, you know, oh, you know, we thought all the Indians were extinct, or
mm-hmm.
y'all stayed in teepees, or, oh, you know, you know, I literally had an ex-boss who somewhat discounted my Indianness, like, because I didn't, like, own a horse and ride a horse to work. You know, I'm like, we're not horse culture, okay?
Right, exactly.
It would be more appropriate as a... Right. And it would be more appropriate as a Tuscarora to show up to work in a canoe on the river
right,
than a horse,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, with... You know, it's like that book, Everything You Know About Indians is Wrong.
It's wrong.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we have to define ourselves and present ourselves to the world as we want to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to embrace that and live that because that's who we'll become.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I meant when I said you were saying about a reservation. We have the right to define ourselves and our spaces and what are we doing? We'll tell you what we're doing. What are we? We'll tell you who we are. And I think that
right.
everything you're saying is so brilliant for that moment. And we've got to move into, I think, action steps, in our personal sovereignty. You said the magic words around here, spiritual sovereignty. And so I want to talk about spiritual and personal sovereignty as well. And that's something that I'm just super passionate about. You know, I really am. And I think that is one of the easiest ways to start implementing thinking about sovereignty into our lives. You know, if I hand you a law book and say, here, read these treaties, here's a highlighter, you know, good luck. A lot of people may not feel like they have the time or inclination to do that, even though it's a great thing to do. I read our treaties, and I'm glad I did. But I also decided that I would wear my traditional skirts and ribbon skirts to church, to work, to any place where other people would be dressed, right? You know, I would wear my clothing, and that would be an exertion of personal sovereignty, the medicine that clothing brings with it. And so can you talk to us about spiritual sovereignty and personal sovereignty, please?
Well, I'll tell you, my idea about it is, well, as far as personal, when it's personal, you know, I think that first we have to understand and acknowledge that we are all spiritual beings. You know, I think at the most fundamental level, that is it. And, you know, I don't think that's too difficult for natives to understand, because I really don't know any natives, especially any Tuscaroras, and I'm sure, you know, amongst your people too, who would deny that, you know, we are not spiritual beings, mm-hmm. Or deny that we are. So that's first. And then, you know, we have to, if we're keeping the good mind, we're going to be able to trust our inner guidance, you know, aligning with our values, you know, practicing the good mind, practicing our spiritual practices, the knowing what's good for our spirit and soul, because that needs to be cared for the same way that somebody might take care of their body, by exercising or taking supplements or eating the right diet. You know, our spirit, our souls, you know, they need to be nurtured the same way. You know, if we are going against our, you know, what we know is right, or, you know, living in a way that, you know, our soul is not compatible with, you know, that's when some really bad stuff starts happening in people's lives.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's my belief about, basically, about, you know, personal and spiritual sovereignty.
Well, I enjoy hearing it, because it's the most important kind of sovereignty, your spiritual sovereignty. And I think that's why colonization efforts worked so hard to take that away from us, because they knew that was where our power is, our real power.
Yes.
Yes, the battlefield, and yes, but the education system and the religious system were all meant to deprive us of the core of our power. And so I appreciate what you're saying, and I thank you for bravely saying it. And I wonder how you feel about how we teach this. You know, people always talk about children are the future, but children are the now. They are absolutely the now. I mean, they're learning, they're growing.
Right.
The things they learn today will determine the kind of parents and grandparents that they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that means we impact the seventh generation with this current generation. So how do you feel about sovereignty and our youth?
So many good things you just said that really have me, you know, just are just really just unsurprisingly echoing things that I have always thought and felt, and things that I was, as recently as last night, I was thinking about some old stories, old Tuscarora stories and such. You know, I'm presently writing a story about, you know, the Little Summer, or some Haudenosaunee people call it, you know, lateness warmth. But, you know, the settlers tend to call it Indian summer. So, you know, I'm writing that story presently in our language, and working on a special video to put the story to. I'm hoping for the best here. My point to this is that that's briefly how we Tuscaroras have always instilled our values, our cultural values and morals into the next generation, the children, is through storytelling. And we're coming up on storytelling season, you know, because Tuscaroras, we tell stories in the, you know, typically in the winter, you know, we got an old belief that if, you know, you people tell stories out of season, then, you know, in the old days they'd say, like, snakes will wait on the side of the path for you and get you when you pass by, or you'll be lazy, you know, you'll be lazy forever if you just, if you tell stories out of season. So we've got these old beliefs about not telling stories out of season. But, so I'm gearing up for that. But I was thinking last night about some of these stories and that children are an investment. And I think that if we collectively, you know, if everybody looked at their children from prenatal, you know, to throughout life as an investment, you know, how much better could that make the world, you know? If we just all look at our children as investments in everything that we do. Just like, say, I don't know, a bank account, or I don't know, I don't own any stocks or bonds or anything or do that sort of Wall Street stuff. But, you know, I guess that that's the kind of thing that they do with money. And, and you know, if you add this or you do that or you treat this profile the right way or the wrong way, it's going to increase in value or decrease in value. And so I think it's really the same sort of concept with children. They are an investment. And everything that a parent does, everything that they bring into their home, everything they expose them to, everything they say to them, all the actions, it is a cumulative effect. And I've often said that we are nothing if not the sum of our ancestors. And so, you know, and most directly, our parents, of course. But, you know, there is a very real correlation there. You know, I think that, that if people look at their children as investments, they're going to, they could, I feel like, just really create some very strong, strong returns or benefits on those investments. You know, they'll be raised right.
Yes, absolutely. I am a big believer in maternal sovereignty, that I may not be able to change anything in the government. I may not ever change much, even in the rest of the world, but I can transmit our traditional values and culture and all of the things that we believe and we want to see continued in our indigenous family. And I can also be a cycle breaker. And I've certainly had to be, as you know. And I, you can also be a cycle breaker of the toxic things that need to be decolonized or indigenized or just removed altogether. Just, you know, we don't need those go into any more generations. And so that is something I really want to say to our friends who are listening, that your home, your sphere, your circle, your family, you know, you are sovereign. You are able to decide that we will eat this way or speak this way or dress this way or live this way or believe this way or help and give and be kind this way, whether you're indigenous or not. You know, we're talking about sovereignty from an indigenous viewpoint, but for our friends who listen who have a different culture, what does your culture say? You know, there's no such country as white. So everybody comes from somewhere. Everybody has a
right.
has a an ancestral culture, and it's worth it to find out who are you? What did they do in Italy?
Mm-hmm.
What do Nordic people and Celtic people and Gaelic people do? What are the values and the beliefs and traditions that you have that belong to you that you want to continue, that you want to walk in? Some things you don't have to walk in everything. We don't either. Right? There's some things even in our indigenous cultures we are like, well, that was nice, but we don't do that now. But there are other things
right.
that you say, this must go into the future. This must.
Yes.
My children and grandchildren must be people of honor. They must be people of kindness and respect. They must, you know, love the Creator and love others. You know, I want that to go forward. And so that's why I feel like this conversation is so important.
Yes, it is. And I will be the first to commend you for being such a fantastic representation of what it means to be an Indigenous mother and a cycle breaker. You know, I know that there are just so many people out there that I just wish so many children out there, so many people out there had a mother like you. You know, you really are a fantastic example of an Indigenous mother. And yes, raising your child with love and proper guidance, all of that. I see it all. I've seen it all from the beginning. I'm always so inspired by you that way. Well, it's true. It's true.
Well,
and these things.
That's the best thing you could ever
do. Yes.
It really is. And all I ever wanted to do was be a mother and be a good one. So that is wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
And you're welcome. But it really is so true. It really is.
Well, I want that for every child. I want every child to have people in their lives that believe that they are a blessing, a gift, magical, wonderful miracles, because they are. And I'm really grateful to the Creator, and I'm grateful to you that I have the privilege of motherhood. You know, motherhood is my vocation, and I am not perfect, but I sure would like to be. And I am so thankful to be a mother, and I'm so thankful for what you just said, because I will carry it around in my heart forever and ever.
And I am glad to hear that. I know that, your child's going to just grow up to be just an amazing, amazing person, because mm-hmm. there was the benefit of having someone like you mm. as a mother.
Mm.
Yes, it all begins at home.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can't, you know, be an awful parent and then send their children out to school like school is somehow going to fix them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
home
yeah.
should be,
mm-hmm.
it all begins at home.
It
you know?
All does. All of it does. And I think that's why home was the center of our tribal cultures. You know,
family yes.
and families make up a tribe, right?
Yes.
And that's what makes up a nation, mm-hmm. our families. And so this conversation
yeah.
is so important for all of our families who are listening, that you have an opportunity, a beautiful, wonderful opportunity to exercise sovereignty in so many areas. And I sure hope you will. I sure do love you, Dwayne Brayboy. Thank you for joining us today.
And I love you, too. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I already can't wait till you come back. Oh, thank you.
I'm looking forward to it myself.
I know. Yeah. I'm so glad you'll be back. I love every part of this conversation, and I loved sharing it with all of you who listen. We're so thankful for you, our sponsors, our donors, our platforms, our listeners, our prayer warriors, our friends, our family, our loved ones, our Indigenous people, and our allies everywhere, 160 countries in all 50 states in the United States. We love you all. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm really excited for when we're all together again next time. See you then.
Silent, it came. Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back. What's the world for
you? You got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.